This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Protocol for Life Balance, offering a wide range of professional-grade supplements using ingredients backed by strong scientific research. Among them, two stand out, which help nourish your brain: Protosorb Magnesium and Cogumin SLCP. Protosorb Magnesium features a patented form of magnesium that easily crosses the blood-brain barrier, delivering magnesium directly to your brain. Cogumin SLCP features optimized curcumin, which also allows free curcumin to cross the blood-brain barrier. Protosorb Magnesium and Cogumin SLCP are highly innovative products that help nourish your brain. They're only available from healthcare practitioners, but they're available to you at drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's subject is something that really is on the cutting edge of the science of the brain, because today we're going to talk about neuroplasticity. And if you don't know what neuroplasticity is, well, it's important that you learn about it, because it's a vital concept that's revolutionizing the way we think about the brain. You know, I remember those nights back in college where we kind of indulged a little bit too much. And the morning after, we woke up a little bit groggy, and we speculated on how many brain cells we had irrevocably killed off. But we consoled ourselves with the fact that we had billions of brain cells, and that, you know, with the reserve of brain cells that we had left, we could still manage, pass our courses, get our BAs, and proceed in life. Today's guest, who is Dr. Alan Miller, is going to introduce us to the concept of neuroplasticity, which offers hope to college students across the world. Right, Alan?
You know, while you were saying that, I was remembering that I, in a previous lifetime, I was a club DJ for about 10 years.
Wow, okay.
And I had this fantasy of in front of my DJ booth having a countdown clock that says brain cells killed to date. And
That's pretty good.
Wasn't counting down, it was counting up. But yeah, I was. So I'm with you there.
Okay, so Alan also has a more, shall we say, exalted incarnation as a naturopathic physician. And he is executive director of medical research for Thorne Research, which is a wonderful company that makes excellent supplements that are designed for health professionals. That's a post that he's held for 23 years, which makes him considerably more long-lived than some of the most recent White House staff. Isn't that correct, Alan? 23
yes,
years.
So yes.
How do you do it? You know, you must be doing something right. He's graduated from Bastyr University with a naturopathic degree. So recently, Alan, you gave a wonderful talk at IFM, the Institute for Functional Medicine, on the subject of, as we mentioned earlier, neuroplasticity. So explain that concept, please.
First, I have to correct you just real quick.
Okay.
I did a lecture for a group of about 40 doctors during IFM.
Oh, okay.
In Los Angeles. It wasn't part of their curriculum.
Okay, to be precise.
Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to get across here was the effects of nutrients and botanicals and lifestyle medicine on neuroplasticity. And to even get into that, of course, you have to define what is neuroplasticity. And neuroplasticity is considered to be the ability of the brain to form and reorganize synaptic connections, especially in response to learning or experience or following injury. So this comes back to yours and my previous lifestyle issues here, the following injury part of it.
Right.
But it's also about just learning and making your brain more pliable. The word plastic sort of brings up other connotations, but really we're talking about being pliable, being able to react to situations, learn from situations, cement those memories, and adapt. And when I was in Los Angeles, and I was getting ready to do this lecture, I didn't really have an opening for it quite yet. And I saw a dog being walked on the streets of Los Angeles. And I started thinking about my dogs back home at that point, who live a very different life. They're not being walked on streets where you've got traffic and noise and stuff all around. You know, they've got a big backyard and can come and go as they please. And I thought about how that dog, that city dog, and their experience is so much different, and their ability to adapt to that is really fantastic. And you start looking at animals, you start looking at people, and their ability to adapt to new situations. It really depends on their ability to form new synapses, and that really depends on that brain being plastic or pliable.
Mm-hmm. Right, like Play-Doh, the notion that it can be shaped and formed in many different ways, and that it doesn't get locked in so that changes in the environment overwhelm its ability to adapt.
Exactly, yeah. So we're talking form and function here, yes.
Indeed. So one of the issues that you tackle in this talk that you gave is what happens to the brain when you have TBI, traumatic brain injury, or a concussion. That's a pretty common scenario, not just in returning overseas veterans, but also in athletes, in college athletes, professional athletes, whether it be hockey, baseball, particularly football, soccer, lots of head injuries. But there are actually ways to enhance recovery other than simply resting. I mean, the protocol is, you know, team physicians and neurologists say, okay, rest, you know, we're going to take you, put you on the bench for a couple of weeks. And but there's some things you can do to enhance recovery, correct?
Correct, yeah. And if you saw the news last week about NFL players and the study that's going on.
99%.
Looking at NFL players, ex-NFL players' brains, 99% of them had evidence of traumatic brain injury. And that is just mind-blowing. That's incredible. And, you see it in all levels of sport. You see it from kids on up. And a study from last year, from 2016, looked at sitting players and sitting them for at least 3 weeks after a concussion. And those kids that didn't go back, or actually what they were looking at in this particular scenario was putting them back in the game versus sitting them. And those kids that sat recovered so much faster. The kids that went back into the game took 40% longer time to heal and be symptom-free after that injury. So that's so important. But there are also some other things that we can do, because one of the things that happens after a traumatic brain injury is you get an upregulation of some specific enzymes that are responsible for healing and responsible for repairing DNA, and which is great. You know, it's this healing response, but that healing response saps the brain of energy, basically. It saps the brain of NAD. Mm-hmm. And you need NAD for your mitochondria to be functioning properly. Your mitochondria are actually the elements in the cells that are creating NAD. So you have this conundrum here where you are stimulating this healing response, but if you don't have enough of that substrate, that NAD to plug into that, then you're not going to heal very well, and then you can have other downstream problems from that.
Yeah, I've heard it said that taking lots of fish oil is helpful in recovery from head injuries. In fact, we had a recent guest who's a military guy from the Brain Health Research Institute, who's a big believer in the use of high-dose fish oil, and he has protocols at BHRI for recovery, but his nutritional support is limited to high-dose fish oil. He's not talking mm-hmm. about any other nutrients.
Now, fish oil is vitally important, and I've seen that anecdotally. High doses of fish oil, up to 20 grams a day, can be very beneficial. But it's not the only piece of the puzzle here. As with so many different nutrients, you know, they're not like drugs, and you're going to get a limited response from a single nutrient. And it's best if you give that nutrient along with other ones that are going to work synergistically, maybe in a little different mechanism. And so that's where some of the other nutrients that support NAD production and mitochondrial function really come in here.
Well, help us with NAD, because NAD stands for nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, if I'm not mistaken. I remember my college biochemistry. And the word nicotinamide is in there, which is vitamin
right.
B3. So how is it that we can support our production of NAD? Can we simply, you know, vitamin B3 is a cheap commoditized nutrient. You can get 300 for $9.99. And that's a way to get into that pathway. But is it the most effective way to support NAD production?
It doesn't appear to be the most effective way. It is one way. And I always look at that name, you know, nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, and it's almost has nicotine in there, so that confuses mm-hmm. some people too.
Right.
But nicotinamide is the niacinamide portion of vitamin B3.
And so just to be clear, nicotinamide and niacinamide are equivalent, right? They're the
yes,
same.
Yes, so they are synonymous.
So if you get 100 milligrams of nicotinamide or 100 milligrams of niacinamide, these are the same vitamin B3.
The same, yes.
Okay.
So you've got two forms of vitamin B3. You've got niacin, and then you've got niacinamide.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who has taken niacin understands what it does in the body as far as the side effects of it, that you can get this flushing of the skin. You can feel very hot, mm-hmm. and you can look very hot. You know, you get beet red, and
right.
some people actually get hive-looking stuff on their skin, which isn't very comfortable. So that's not the best way to increase NAD, because most people won't do it. Just the compliance on that is so low.
Mm-hmm.
So then you've got niacinamide. And niacinamide is helpful, but niacinamide in its process of creating NAD gets metabolized, and it can actually downregulate a couple of enzymes that are really important here. So what we have come up with is nicotinamide riboside. Nicotinamide riboside is similar to niacinamide, but it's a naturally occurring substance. First, a naturally occurring substance in nature. It's found in very small amounts in milk and in beer. So pick your poison. But
you'd have to drink 400 gallons of beer every week to get the
exactly.
equivalent amount
yeah.
of
yeah.
yeah, right.
So like with resveratrol being in red wine, you have to drink a lot of it to really get a good amount that's going to increase blood levels. So it's also nicotinamide riboside is also a naturally occurring substance in the body. It's part of something called the NAD salvage pathway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way of the body. It's a way in the body. It's to take nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, NAD, and sort of recycle it after it's been depleted. So giving that as a supplement can increase the amount of NAD. And there are a lot of animal studies so far on it. There are a few human studies. The first human pharmacokinetic study looking at this showed that modest amounts of nicotinamide riboside really did increase the amount of NAD in the blood. That's what you want to see.
And it's no secret to my listeners here on Intelligent Medicine that I'm a big proponent of nicotinamide riboside, or NR. Brand name Niacel, which I believe Thorne has an exclusive on in the professional supplement marketplace. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, so it to me, that it is, you know, there's not a lot of nutrients that come along that really, I think, revolutionize the field of nutritional medicine. And as I go along in this field, it takes more and more to impress me, because, I don't know, maybe I'm getting jaded, but, you know, there's so many claims of this spectacular breakthrough nutrient. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it works great in mice, but it's of limited applicability to humans, or you have to take enormous amounts for it to be practical, and you know it would cost you $28,000 a year to get the requisite amount that makes a difference in your health and performance. But Niacel, that's the brand name, or nicotinamide riboside, is amazing because it is. In some ways, I think it's as revolutionary as coenzyme Q10, which is called ubiquinone. It's ubiquitous, and so too is NAD within the cells. And if we can replete NAD, that may be the key to repairing a lot of functions related to disease, degenerative conditions, and aging.
Correct. And you landed right there on coenzyme Q10. And CoQ10 and NAD have a little bit in common here in that they are both very active within the mitochondria of our cells. And everybody knows the mitochondria are the energy powerhouses of the cell. I was having a discussion with one of my adult daughters the other day, and I mentioned the word mitochondria, and she just like spit that up, that definition. And I said, "You paid attention, very good." Mm-hmm. But yeah. It creates ATP. And that's not the only thing that mitochondria do, but the mitochondria are responsible for creating that cellular fuel, that cellular energy. And without enough NAD, the mitochondria don't do that very well. They're not very efficient. And same thing with CoQ10. So CoQ10 is involved in oxidative phosphorylation within the mitochondria, and that end product from that is ATP. But ATP is also created in other places within the mitochondria because of NAD. So if you don't have enough NAD, your mitochondria are not very healthy. And we have up to thousands of mitochondria in our cells. Now, I think you and I both went to school in an age where that was not really well defined, the number of mitochondria that we had in our cells. We knew, yeah, we had mitochondria, they created ATP, but you look at cardiac muscle cells that can have over 3,000 mitochondria per cell. It's a very energetic cell. It makes sense. It's a cell that doesn't get a break ever and needs to be creating its own ATP from food that we bring in and creating fuel for the cell from food that we have digested. And so NAD is an integral part of that, and that NAD is essential for mitochondrial function, ATP production, and survival of the mitochondria and the cell as well. And declining levels of NAD are the hallmark of cellular deterioration. Mm-hmm. And if we're talking cellular deterioration, we can talk about neurodegeneration as well here.
Now, are there any clinical trials? I know that this is early in the science of NR, but are there clinical trials looking at the applicability of supplementing with nicotinamide riboside, say, in concussion victims or even individuals with dementia or Alzheimer's?
Right now, there's a study going on in conjunction with Mayo Clinic that is looking at healthy college football players after a season of playing. And some of them, of course, would have been concussed in that time as well. And they're doing some brain imaging that shows the amount of NAD activity in the brain. And they are doing that along with some supplementation of NR, 750 milligrams a day for 12 weeks.
For a listening audience, that would translate to 3 capsules of the extra strength Niacel. I think Niacel is a product that comes in 2 strengths, 125 milligrams of which you would have to take 6, or 250 milligrams of which you have to take 3 to achieve 750 milligrams. I personally take 250 milligrams twice daily, and I don't go a day without it. And I attribute that to some extent to my ability to continue exercising at a high level, because a couple of years ago, and I actually blogged about this, I kind of hit the skids energetically. I just didn't know what was going on. I skipped doing triathlons for a couple of years, but I made a comeback. Part of it, I think, was due to supplementing with NR on a regular basis. Is there any basis for believing that we can enhance athletic performance, endurance, energy with commonly available dosing of NR?
The answer has to be yes. We're waiting right now for data from a study that was done in conjunction with Mayo that was a Kilimanjaro expedition. And they were supplementing with nicotinamide riboside. And it was very sophisticated. They brought up a lot of sophisticated equipment to the mountain to assess the people that were climbing and looking at, you know, oxygen capabilities and things like that. And so we will get some data on that soon. There is data there are data in animals, and it's very encouraging because you look at the animals and you look at them after supplementing with nicotinamide riboside, and you look at their cells, and their cells, you look at the before and after, and you can see the number of mitochondria within those cells has greatly increased. So the mitochondria have actually gotten bigger, and there are more of them. And I think that for some people, they're like, how could that be? You know, can you make more mitochondria within your cells? And the answer there is yes, you can. And that's really fascinating that the mitochondria that you have can sort of split in the middle, like a bacteria can split in the middle and form two, and they can split, and then you've got four. So you can exponentially increase the amount of energy that your cells are going to make in response to a number of things. NR is one of them. Just exercise is another one. Mm-hmm. So you can increase the body's ability to respond and adapt to exercise within the mitochondria by making more mitochondria. And the thing with NR and a few other nutrients is that you can stimulate the body to make more mitochondria, and then you can make them more efficient in the process. So it's a great little one too.
And there was an interesting scientific study recently on glaucoma, and they have an experimental model for glaucoma in rats or mice where they fed these rodents water that was laced with not NR, not nicotinamide riboside, but vitamin B3, nicotinamide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it actually helped their glaucoma. Is there any basis for believing that glaucoma has a neurodegenerative component that may be supported by vitamin B3, but even more plausibly, NR?
It may be that it's helping with the neurodegenerative process, and it may also be helping just with the oxidative stress component as well. Mm-hmm. Because if you have an increase in oxidative stress, that downregulates some of these enzymes and the enzymes within the mitochondria as well. So it may be functioning in that capacity.
I seem to recall there's some studies related to NR administration and people suffering from hearing problems. If I'm not mistaken, it was age-related hearing loss or presbyacusia, fancy medical term for, you know, getting old and you can't hear anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But was there anything on tinnitus? Because goodness, it'd be great if we could come up with some sort of nutritional support for tinnitus.
Like I told you early on, in my former lifetime, I was subjected to some pretty loud music for many hours at a time.
You're a pretty good lab rat for that particular
proposition. I'm a pretty good lab rat for tinnitus. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I found is if I can handle my stress, if I can reduce my stress, and if I can improve adrenal function, that helps me probably the most. The study that you were mentioning was hearing loss, and
okay.
It was hearing loss that was related to high levels, high decibels.
Mm-hmm.
So it can still help in that, and they didn't look at tinnitus in that, and so I can't really give you a great answer for that. I haven't noticed specifically that mine is any better or worse when taking NR, but I do see other things that help.
And, you know, what's interesting is that a lot of the research on nutritional support for hearing loss is sponsored by the military because their VA costs are enormous for service-related injuries to the auditory apparatus. And if they could figure out, you know, some kind of super potent pill to give to GIs on the rifle range or people handling jet aircraft, you know, or the loud noises, mechanical noises that you get in the engine room of a ship, this would save the Pentagon enormous amounts of their budget.
Absolutely, yeah. It would save them a lot of money and save a lot of suffering as well. And the other thing that they're always looking at in the military, like they are with elite athletes, you're looking for how do we improve their function? And how do we improve it just that little bit, that extra little amount that really makes a difference.
Indeed. Okay, this is a good point at which to pause because we've scratched the surface of our discussion on neuroplasticity and how to enhance it. There are many components, lifestyle components, dietary components, supplement components, and we're going to elaborate on that in just a moment with today's guest. He's Dr. Alan Miller. He's a naturopathic physician who's executive director of medical research at Thorn Research, a great company that makes excellent, high-quality nutritional supplements for health professionals. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.